and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we have two very special guests from DMAC. We have two professors, Christina Walkup, a biology professor, and Mel Sadapur, an environmental science professor. So I feel like I'm not very, you know, maybe the dumbest person in the room right now because we got all these smart professors here. And then Jesse Lowry, of course, is our director of research and conservation here at Blank Park Zoo. And Jesse, why don't you get started on today's show?
Thanks, Ryan. Happy to be here again. And I always like to start off the show with talking about Blank Park Zoo, saving animals in the wild, and kind of setting the stage. So the mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of our natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And I like to call it a window to the wild, a place where we invite the community to come and see these beautiful animals, look into the eyes of a snow leopard, get to see the lion cubs pretty soon that we just had recently, and feel that sense of awe that we all get when we see these animals. But then how do we turn that sense of awe into a real conservation action, into something that's actually going to make a difference in this world? And that's our job as a modern zoo. And the zoo helps to save animals and help the environment in many different ways. Being green and sustainable in our daily operations is a fantastic way to have a positive impact on especially the native animals here in Iowa. And I always like to say, if you want the most bang for your buck, you should really work to protect your local environment. And we've got a couple projects that we work on a lot, like Upcycle, removing invasive plant species from local parks, and Plant Grow Fly, where we encourage butterfly gardens to be planted around the state and nation. And we also send our expert staff to the field to help with field projects, those organizations and people who are out on the front lines working to save the animals in their range countries. We support Giraffe Conservation Foundation in Namibia, International Rhino Foundation in Indonesia, Hornbill Research Foundation in Thailand, and many of these organizations could use help from some of our expert staff that we have here at Blank Park Zoo. We've got experts in veterinary health, in animal husbandry, in videography, in graphic design, and we're able to lend our expertise to these field researchers. And we've just started that the last couple years, and that's been a great addition to our holistic conservation program. And one of the biggest drivers, and I truly believe this, I have a 3.5-year-old daughter, and I want her to grow up to be a conservationist like I am, and I work with students all the time, and I know that education is key. Blank Park Zoo has an education team that goes statewide to really inspire the younger generation to make a positive difference in this world. And I reached out to two of my close friends, Mel and Christina, who I admire in the field of education, environmental education, and who are trailblazers in the local community and really do a great job of inspiring their students. And I've worked with both of them for a long time. So welcome, ladies, again to the show.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
So I think first we should get a little background on both of you. Tell us, and we'll start with you, Mel. Tell us about where you're from, your background, how you ended up at DMAC.
Okay. Well, let's see. It's kind of a long and winding road, but I always wanted to work with animals. I've been an animal lover since I was a kid growing up in Minnesota and spent a lot of time actually at the fantastic zoo up there looking into the eyes of the animals, as I did this afternoon when I played a bit of hooky coming here a little early. I looked into the eyes of the snow leopard, actually. But I always wanted to work with animals and wasn't sure how to go about that. Nobody else in my family had ever gone to college. I didn't have a lot of direction on how that would happen. So I ended up coming down to Des Moines to go to Drake for environmental law. That was a place, an opportunity, I thought, to help animals. But as it turned out, I hated the pre-law classes. They were not for me. So I have several really expensive minors from Drake, and I graduated with a journalism degree. And I went out and worked in journalism and marketing for a while and realized this is not what I wanted to be doing with my life. This is not the path that I was hoping for. I'm not helping animals. I'm just working. And so I gave myself a year and made myself do some kind of soul searching and figure it out. And I went up to Iowa State because somebody told me they had fantastic career advisors up at Iowa State. And it turned out that they were absolutely right. And I did a huge aptitude assessment and it spat out two options for me. It said you should be a wildlife biologist. Hooray, that sounded like a good choice. Or a teacher, which I had no interest whatsoever in pursuing. So, okay, wildlife biologist it is. I had to go back to school then because I had a bachelor in arts. So I had to go back to school for a couple of years. I took nothing but math and science, but I loved it. It was kind of grueling, but it was fantastic. And I did several summer internships while I was doing that. I was a backcountry park ranger at Olympic National Park. Found I didn't really want to be a park ranger, but I did really enjoy, on my time off, I would go volunteer with the wildlife research teams that were working. And I loved that work. So I got to work with ravens, I got to do some work with sea otters, and with river otters as well, and it was just amazing. So the summer after that, I did an internship here in Iowa, Washington, Iowa, pretty different from Washington State, but it was a grassland bird study, and I had to get up at like 3 o'clock every morning to beat the birds. They wake up at the crack of dawn, so I had to wake up before them, but it was a lot of fun. I really loved it. I felt like I was really contributing to science that would help with conservation efforts. But I also learned that if you want to be in charge of anything in science, you have to have a graduate degree. And I'm very bossy, so I needed to be in charge of something. So I decided to go to grad school, and I wanted to work with carnivores. I've always liked the meat-eating animals the best. And I looked all over the country to find out what professors were working with large carnivores. And I applied to several of them and got no responses back, which was a little weird. So then I applied to all those same positions. My name is actually Melanie. I applied to all the same positions with my name as Mel and got like 3 callbacks the next day. So just just a side note, it's still wildlife can be a man's world, but that is changing, I'm glad to see. So anyway, I ended up taking a position at the University of Wisconsin and I worked with black bears. And I got to trap them and radio collar them and follow them around. And the point of it was a study. It was in the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest in northern Wisconsin, and they were developing a new management plan for the forest. And they wanted to put in a lot more snowmobile and ATV trails. But the bears are very important economically to Wisconsin because they hunt them, and it brings a lot of money to the state. So they wanted to make sure that the new trails didn't interfere too much with the bears and their habitat. So through the study, I was just trying to figure out what aspects of the forest the bears spent the most time with, you know, and we came up with basically, no surprise, they like to be near water and they like mixed forests so they can have both shelter and food. But it did help them look at the maps then, analyze the forest makeup and determine where to put the trails so that they could have both people and bears enjoying the same forest. So I really liked that work, and I was doing carnivore tracking and so on at the same time. But in the end, I found it really a really hard job because people were killing all the animals that I really loved. The bears were hunted, and they hunt with dogs in Wisconsin, and I had bait. They hunt over bait, and I had a hard time with that. And also, a lot of my friends were working with wolves, and they were covered by the Endangered Species Act at that time in Wisconsin. And one of my friends lost most of their tagged or collared wolves to people who illegally killed them, and that was just absolutely heartbreaking to me. So I realized something needed to be done about the underlying problem. Just going out and helping the animals was a lot of fun for me, and working with them hands-on, I loved it. But there was an underlying issue that really needed to be dealt with, and I thought the area or the way to deal with that was through education. So I came back down to Des Moines and started teaching at DMAC, and here I am.
I have to pause and say that this is one of my favorite things about this radio show is bringing in all of our local contacts and hearing their backstories. And that is a wonderful story, and I especially like the Melanie Mel thing that I'm going to have to ask you more about later to see if you've had to use that in other arenas. So, Christina, let's hear some about your background. And I know you and I have something in common, our love for primates. So excited to hear your story as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me here. I'm originally from Minnesota. I went to St. Olaf College in Northfield for biology. I like Mel, I knew pretty early on that I wanted to study. I wanted to work with animals, actually. I knew that pretty early on. So I majored in biology, and early I didn't quite know what I wanted to do. I just knew I needed to go to grad school. So when I got to the end of my four-year degree, I knew I needed to go to grad school. I recently gotten really inspired and interested in human evolution. And so I started researching where to go for that, and that led me to Jill Preetz at Iowa State. She was at Iowa State. She recently just left, unfortunately, but she was just starting out at Iowa State at that time, and she was a primatologist in the anthropology program there. So I came down, I met with her, and fortunately got accepted into that program, and that was my first bridge into primatology. Was so really what inspired me was working with her and getting accepted into her program. And so I did a master's in anthropology with my focus on primates at Iowa State, and actually did my research here at Blank Park Zoo looking at the Japanese macaques. And I compared their behavior at in the zoo environment at this zoo and then the Minnesota Zoo. So that was, it feels like a long time ago, but that's what, I spent a lot of time, one summer here at the Blank Park Zoo watching the monkeys here. And then after that, I was, fortunate to, I started working actually at the Great Ape Trust, which, is no longer, present, but I worked with the orangutans at Great Ape Trust while I was doing my PhD research, again at Iowa State, and so I worked with orangutans looking at how they use tool use to solve different problems. And I wanted to know if they really understood the had a causal understanding of how a tool actually works. And so I did a number of really interesting experiments with the orangutans at the center, and was published my research and contributed to a book. And that was a wonderful experience. And then later on, I did come to DMACC and started teaching first as an adjunct part-time at the Boone campus, and then was lucky enough to get a job at the West campus teaching. I teach biology and environmental science. I also teach an anthropology course on the discipline that I focused on human origins. So that keeps me pretty busy.
And I was lucky enough to have a volunteer position at the Great Ape Trust and got to make enrichment items for the orangutans there. And that was such an amazing experience. And so I always remember that as a very exciting, rewarding time in my life. Ladies, let's talk about how you teach sustainability and environmental education in your classes. And for me, it all boils down to how do we incite behavior change? How do we let people know what's happening in the world and then incite some kind of positive reaction that's actually going to make a difference in our world? And I know that's a really broad question, but Mel, do you want to make some comments?
Sure. I guess my main approach to that is to try to show them how these issues apply directly to their own lives. A lot of our students, so I ask a lot of questions of the students at the beginning of the semester, trying to get to know them and what's important to them. And then that helps me kind of cater my teaching to the students in the class. So if I have a lot of people that have children, for example, we can talk about how a lot of these things impact children, you know, over long periods of exposure. And of course, everyone is going to want to do some, you know, make some change if something is negatively impacting their child. Some of them don't have families yet, but there's always something that is important to them. So if I can figure out what that is, then I can show them how problems in the environment or issues with sustainability impact the things that are important to them. Then they can move it out into their own life and change their behavior. We do a lot of pretty depressing discussion in environmental science, I would say. So I try to make a lot of the assignments solutions, personal solutions. So, for example, we might be talking about pollutants, and then an assignment might be, okay, now go home, look in your, you know, cabinet where you keep your cleaning supplies, look at the active ingredients on those, and then look up some of the health impacts. Then go out and find a safe, friendly, you know, DIY, usually remedy or, you know, alternative to that. And so a lot of the students will be like appalled and shocked. Oh, I have all these really toxic things right under my sink in my kitchen. But luckily, there's a cheap and easy solution that I can make myself that, you know, works just as well, or in some cases better. That's really empowering to them to know that they can take that action themselves and make their own lives cleaner. And hopefully over time, they'll then share that with their friends and family and their circle, pass the word along.
And, you know, that really just reminds me, I had a conversation today with a student and she was talking about her interest in climate change and the design of cities to be more sustainable. And so we have to use our cars less and so on. And the conversation got to doom and gloom very quickly. And I made the comment that in my career, I have to focus, I always have to be cognizant to focus on successes. And so, you know, looking at the big picture sometime can be overwhelming. And climate change is definitely one of those subjects that I feel I would have a hard time working directly with. But I think across the board in any environmental, you know, profession or field, that it's important that we all really take a moment, celebrate the successes, see where we can make a difference. And I love how you talk about students in their own lives. And I'm wondering, is that a formal survey or is it just one-on-one conversations as the class gets going?
I tend to do a mix of things. I'm really pretty nosy at the beginning of the semester. So I will do some online questions where I have them introduce themselves, but they have to answer very specific questions. So I get some information there. Then I'll often do a survey that I hand out as an icebreaker and they trade it with some other people and talk about it, but then they hand it in. So just different ways that, and then through conversation as well. We do some activities at the very beginning of the semester that tend to kind of bring out what issues are and are not important to the students in the class. And so that helps me figure out who they are and maybe the best way to teach or reach them.
Christina, what kind of methods in your teaching do you employ to try to push people to the next level to make a positive change in our environment?
I think I can echo a lot of what Mel said, actually. And it's one of the benefits of being at DMAC is we have such small class sizes. So when you have a small class size, you know, 25 max in a class, and it's the average is lower than that, it means you can make that time to get to know the students. So generally, you know, in my classes, I don't typically have a strict lecture format. It's really discussion based. So you can have those discussions, just like Mel was saying, actually get feedback from students, get them involved. You know, on this topic, we get such a range of what students know. You know, do they know that there's issues going on? Some of course do. They've learned a lot about this previous. Some have very little exposure to it. So that's where those conversations are really helpful and have those connections.
And I think that really mirrors how we deal with our audience here at the zoo too, because we're mainly talking to the general public and to a lot of kids. And so just like you said, we have to find out quickly where they are and then make sure that the messaging, you know, is appropriate for everyone in your audience, everyone in your class or everyone that I'm speaking to at the zoo. And so that can be a challenge too. Let's get into the really good stuff. Let's talk about some of your specific projects that you guys are working on. And let's just pull one out of a hat, Mel. What would you like to talk about that you are working on at DMAC?
Okay, I have one I'm really excited about that I'm working on pretty hard right now. So a group of us at Urban Campus are working with the Iowa Department of Transportation Living Roadways Trust Fund Outdoor Learning Environment Grant. It's long to say, and it's much longer to apply for, but it's really an exciting opportunity. So this grant is meant to give schools and other public spaces opportunity to develop outdoor spaces so people can learn out in the environment and become more involved and knowledgeable about the environment. So on Urban Campus, over the past 10 years, we have done a lot of work with native landscaping. We've removed a lot of non-native trees. A lot of them were ash, so they were removed because of emerald ash borer. And when we pulled those out, we replaced them with a lot of native grasses and forbs and shrubs and things of that nature. And it's fantastic. It's looking really good. But I'm out there all the time, and I can't help but notice I'm like the only one out there. And not only are people not really interacting with the spaces, but we have an outdoor classroom and not a lot of the other instructors take advantage of it. People don't know what they're looking at. You know, it's gorgeous in the summer. People will walk right past all these beautiful plants. They'll come inside and ask maybe someone in the provost's office, "Oh, what was that amazing yellow flower?" Well, you know, they don't know. So we're trying to figure out a way to actually make our outdoor learning environment more educational. So I've come up with this idea that I'm calling the virtual prairie. I might have to come up with something better. But I think how it's going to pan out if we get this grant, which is looking pretty good, I think, knock on wood, I think we're going to do a couple of different things. So we're going to do some signage out in the prairie plantings, and some of them will be, you know, educational, larger signs like you would see in a park that will explain maybe the importance of prairie. There'll be some smaller signs that will talk about maybe individual species of concerns, like pollinators, monarch butterflies, things that a lot of people are familiar with, but will get them excited because it's something that they're interested in. And then we're going to have some smaller signs that just have like a bit.ly, like a shortened website or web address, and maybe a scan tag. All of the signs will have the bit.ly address and the scan tag. So say you're walking past the prairie and you think, oh, I want some more information on that. You can just scan the sign. Any of the prairies will have a sign, scan it, and it will bring you to our fabulous website, which we have yet to develop. But it will have several components. So the first component will be an interactive ID system, so a really simple key. You know, what month is it? What color is the flower? Okay, here are the yellow flowers that bloom in June in our prairie. So then they could easily find and identify their plant. We'll also have a lot of information on there about prairies and why they're important. You know, the history of prairies in Iowa and, you know, the ecology and so on and so forth. So we'll have a lot of that and the benefits of native landscaping. But the other side of this whole coin will also be curricular pieces. So we're going to have activity suggestions. Even, you know, say you are teaching a four-hour class, which I do, and it can be kind of brutal, and you just need to get outside, but you want to do something somewhat organized. We're going to have some different, just quick and easy, get outside, do something to interact with our prairie activities. But we also want to have some examples across various disciplines so that they could actually do assignments out there, hoping that more of the instructors will then start being more involved. We're also going to build in some service learning assignments, so get people out there, you know, working on our prairie and doing some service for our campus, so that will be cool. And last but not least, citizen science. So we've got some citizen science projects going on campus already. We're doing some monarch reporting and tagging. We're using Nature's Notebook to keep track of the phenology of some different plants and animals. And I think we're going to start doing a butterfly identification program that Nathan Brockman up at Ryman Gardens has developed. So people really like the citizen science stuff, so we'll have some training on there and try to get more people involved in that. And then we'll do lots of contests with it to try to lure people out there and, you know, take a selfie with the, you know, prairie rose, go find it. So, you know, all kinds of ways to try to get people out there and interacting with the outdoor spaces. So I'm really excited about that. Sounds like it's a lot of work when I say it like that, though.
It sounds amazing. And I was just thinking, as you were talking at the beginning of the show, a lot about human health and toxins. And it would be great to include some messaging, at least on your website, about the human health benefits of being in a native planted prairie and how it can lower stress. And I believe there's even data out there that sometimes in inner cities, it can decrease violence, which is, I think, just mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And I think the students would think that was pretty cool too. And the Iowa Monarch Conservation Consortium is making a plan in the state of Iowa to help the monarch butterfly, and when it's being considered as an endangered species currently. And so there'll be lots of different things coming down the pike where we need to increase plantings of milkweed and lots of other ways, I think, for your students and your classes to be involved with that as well.
Awesome.
So so many different different things that can be connected to native plants. That sounds amazing. Christina, what project do you want to talk about that you're doing at your campus?
Well, I was going to mention we have planted a couple prairies in the past few years, and that's really thanks to what's going on at Blank Park Zoo with Plant Grow Fly. Through that connection, we had a second prairie last year that we planted with the Neil Smith's People for Pollinators mm-hmm. program, and so we were able to plant that. I was also going to mention we have a new sustainability club on campus. It just started last year, so we're still working on some of the design on it, but it's intended to really get students to have a discussion place for what they want to talk about with conservation issues regarding the campus. So we'll be meeting a couple times a month next semester, and really it's student-led discussions that we're having a couple times a month over the lunch hour. So that's something that we're doing at West Campus. And I also want to mention CI Week is a activity that happens every year at the West Campus for DMAC, and it always happens around every March. So this year it's that first week of March, and every year we usually have at least some people associated with conservation. This year, for example, Dr. David Gallo, an oceanographer, Jill Preetz is coming as well, and so certainly their work with conservation will be discussed at that event as well.
I'm so glad to hear about the sustainability group, because no matter where you live, if you care about animals and you care about the environment, that's the easiest thing that you can do, is to be sustainable in your own life. It's the easiest thing, and everybody can do something. Not everybody can get an electric car, but everybody can recycle, and everybody can conserve water in their uses at their house. And so that's just such an easy message that we can get out. We only have a couple minutes left, so just very briefly, tell us about the food forest before we have to close.
Okay. Well, we have done several community garden projects in the past, and they haven't turned out so hot. The timing can be really problematic with students because they're here in the late spring to do the planting and all excited, and they're here in the fall to do the harvesting and excited about that. Not so much in the summer. That there's a lot of maintenance that doesn't get done, tends to be kind of neglected. So they really like to get involved in food security, and food insecurity is a huge issue on college campuses, unfortunately. So we were trying to come up with a way that we could provide healthy food on campus without having to deal with this kind of summer issue. And so I started looking into more permaculture plantings, and kind of the hot thing right now in permaculture is food forest. So that is basically planting permaculture in a way that kind of mimics the way a natural forest works. So we have taller trees that are our apple trees, pear trees, things of that nature. We have some understory stuff that's a lot of the berry bushes and vines. And then we're also planting perennial herbs and things like rhubarb and stuff down on the ground, strawberries, things like that. So ideally, when this gets a little bit more mature, it will be a forest that can feed both the students, faculty, and staff at DMAC, maybe some of our neighbors as well, and some of our wild neighbors too. So we're going to put in some installations to attract wildlife to it. We're talking about putting in like some owl boxes and things of that nature. We have compost, and that attracts the rodents, and now we need some owls. So anyway, I want it to function as a real forest would function more or less, and also give us some healthy food.
I love that, and I will be visiting in next summer to see it in action. Thank you, ladies, so much for joining us today. And where do people find out more about DMAC and its programs? What's the website?
DMAC.edu.
That's pretty easy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. And if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, go to our website, blankparkzoo.com. And there's a big, huge section about conservation, plant, grow, fly, all the things we do to help save animals here at Blank Park Zoo. We're out of time now, so join us next time for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.